Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. As I record this, we're headed into the holiday season, almost full blast into it. It's almost December, a time of giving, gathering, and let's be honest, spending. It's easy to feel the pressure that money can place on our relationships and our well-being. That's why I've decided to reshare this episode with Chad Hufford, a financial advisor who goes beyond spreadsheets and budgets to focus on something much deeper, our relationship with money. If you're feeling the weight of holiday expenses or just want to approach the new year with more clarity and confidence around your finances, this episode offers the mindset, shifts, and practical habits that can help. So let's revisit this powerful conversation with Chad Hufford and explore how redefining wealth might just bring you more peace this season. Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. This week, we're going to talk about a topic that impacts every business owner, entrepreneur, and individual, our relationship with money. My guest is Chad Hufford, a top-ranked financial planner and the owner of Veritas Wealth Management. Chad is known for helping his clients not only build wealth, but also align their financial decisions with their values, creating a fulfilling and abundant life. And I think I have to start with, first of all, welcome. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Well, Janice, thank you so much for having me. It's a great opportunity to be here and an honor to encourage your audience and help them pursue a more abundant life.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And I guess I have to start with what I was going to interject when I was introducing you is this is not a topic I'm really fond of. Okay, money, talking about money. I love money and I love having, you know, being able to earn money. And it's funny, on Sunday, I was just talking offline with you about my granddaughter on Sunday. She went and she walked into our garage to look for something. And she came back and she had a jar with her that had money in it, like coins and some paper rolling things for putting money in. And there were pennies and quarters and dimes and a few coins from somewhere else and an old Canadian $2 bill, which we haven't seen for years. Anyway, she found this. She said, "I found this money, Grandma. Can I have it?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I'm not sure whose money it is, Amara." And she said, I said, "But let's put it down out on the floor and let's count it. Let's separate it. Let's sort it." Here I'm, the teacher in me starts right away. So she did. And we had this great little time with, you know, the pennies are here and the quarters are here. And I'm like, "Which do you think is the most money? Which pile has the most money?" And she went to the pennies. And I said, "Well, let's put the quarters in piles of four. And then we're going to count them. And then we'll put the pennies in piles of 10. And we're going to count them." And we had to do, you know, I had to keep reminding her she's only five. And anyway, whether it sunk in or not, we had a few math lessons along the way. And so that was kind of fun. But generally speaking, I really don't like talking about money because I'm not very good with it. So I'm going to say to you, how do you see a person's relationship with money influencing their personal and professional relationships? Because if what I say is true, I'm probably having a bad time. But
well, I think what your experience is fairly normal. And I think a lot of us grew up in households where money was mostly taboo. The only time it was brought up was under stressful circumstances. Mm. Maybe somebody made a bad financial decision. Somebody lost their job. There maybe was a healthcare cost that nobody's expecting and mom and dad aren't sure how ends are going to be, or maybe mom and dad were fighting about money. And if you grew up in a house where money was always a screaming match between mom and dad, like, yeah, you're not going to have a great relationship with it. And I think that's where what you just did with Amara is so powerful, is you normalized having a conversation about money under a healthy and calm circumstance. And that's how I grew up. But I realized later in life that that wasn't normal to
Right.
just have normal basic conversations about money. So I'll just give you a little metaphor, but I think just like our health, it can be overwhelming. Like there's all these opinions out there. Everybody on podcasts has an idea. Everybody on Instagram is an expert. And we hear all this conflicting information about money and our health. And I think the tendency for some people is just, I'm just going to stick my head in the sand. This is overwhelming. I'm not going to deal with it. I don't have the right information. I'm just going to ignore it. And our physical health, just like our financial health, the only thing necessary for those areas of our life to deteriorate is negligence. We will not develop a better relationship with money. We will not develop a healthier financial situation or a healthier body by neglecting those areas. So whether you want it to be a part of your life or not, it is. We don't really have a choice. So my goal, one of the reasons I believe I'm here on earth is to help people create a better relationship with money, because money is a wonderful servant. It is a terrible master.
Oh, I love that. Money is a wonderful servant. It's a terrible master. And I get it because a lot of what you said really rang true with me in that I had to deal several years ago. I realized that I had a very, I had a very contentious relationship and a lot of anger around my father after he died. And it was all about money. And I had to deal with it. And it took me a long time, but I did do some work around it. And it kind of, I think I freed that anger so that I could move forward. And you're right, because money was my dad used to say to my mom all the time, "Don't worry about it, dear. I'll look after it. Don't worry about it. I've got it." You know, and so she never knew how to write a check after my dad died. You know, so there was that. And anyway, there's a whole, you know, I should be on the couch to do with that, going through a psych visit with somebody. But you do learn as you go through life, you know, what you can do and what you, there's no shoulds, right? But I love what you said that it's about, you know, it's often about stress, or it's about those adages that we hear when we're kids. Money grows on, doesn't grow on trees. You know, all of those things that we grew up with. I grew up with some of those, and it can affect a lot. So, when did you? I mean, have you always had a good relationship with money, or when did you decide this was your path? I'd love to know how you got there.
So I think just like any relationship, there's struggles, right? There's good times, there's bad times. I mean, I have my own scarcity journey as well, starting this business. And I started in 2007, and a financial practice in 2007 as the world was starting to slowly burn down. And then in 2008 and 2009, the burning down process just sped up. It was a very, very hard time. And I remember a time when, Janice, I'll be honest, I was doubting myself, not just professionally, but even as a father. My wife came from poverty, and we had two kids, one on the way. We were not even getting our basic bills paid every month. And I'm just wondering, how are we going to get out of this? What is going to happen? And it was very emasculating. I felt like, I mean, one of the reasons I chose this profession is to give my wife stability, but it wasn't there. And we didn't know even how to pay for basic groceries. And one day we're coming home from my parents' house, and we pull up in the driveway. Somebody left a box of groceries on our front door, and it was maybe, $80, $100 worth of groceries. But I just remember how impactful that was. It was just like a reminder that I'm not alone in this. But it was a very dark time in my life, and I didn't realize it then. But looking back now, I was battling depression. And so I think we all have scars. And to answer your question, I think for the most part, I've had a good relationship with money, but I still can fall back into that scarcity mindset. And money is easy to measure, which means money can sometimes be the goal, the objective, rather than a means to the end. So I want a more fulfilling life. I want to live a life of more abundance and impact. That's hard to measure. I can measure money. I want to have X amount of dollars to my name by the time I'm such and such an age. That's a lot easier to measure than the impact I'm having. So I think it's a constant battle to make sure that we're all viewing money as a means to an end and not the end in itself. So
Right.
I would say I am blessed to have been introduced to good money management principles very early on. My parents didn't just teach us that, they modeled that. But I can't say that I've always had a great relationship with money. We've had our struggles. I've made my dumb decisions. When I was 19, I had three different vehicles. It just, I felt like I'd never had money before. I felt like I was rich and I was just doing dumb things with it. But where did it start? So my degree is in biochemistry. I was actually headed into medicine.
Oh, wow.
But I realized the impact that money has on people's lives. And because of growing up in a household where my dad was in the financial industry, we talked about money, it was normalized. As an adult, I saw how destructive and dysfunctional poor relationships money can have in people's lives and the negative ripple effect. But I also saw the opposite growing up. I saw that when people start controlling their money rather than having it control them, when they start having confidence, that also has a ripple effect into every area of their life. And I saw my dad taught classes in our church, in the community. He helped people become better stewards of their money. So it actually became a tool rather than something that controlled them. And I just realized this is a wonderful opportunity, not just to change somebody's financial life, but to change their trajectory as a whole. And that's ultimately why I chose this path.
So I think I remember that you were in the were you an athletic trainer?
Yes, so there's a time in my life where I was in the middle of this pivot where I realized medicine
Okay.
was probably not going to be the career for my family. It
Yeah.
was, I still have a passion for it, I would say,
Okay.
but it wasn't going to line up with my family goals. And I wasn't sure what to do. So I started personal training. And I know it's one of your daughters used to own a CrossFit business. So it's a big part of your family too. And it was something that I could scale very quickly.
Sure.
But I didn't want to do it forever.
Right.
So I was working with professional athletes, some Olympians, and got some contracts working with the military, did some stuff with the local police department. And it really kind of got me into this coaching mindset. And it was, even though it felt like a detour or it felt like I was just biding my time, what it did is help develop my coaching ability because coaching is helping somebody create a better relationship with whatever tool that you're using to create victory in their life, to become a better version of themselves. So I realized my goal wasn't just to help people identify a better financial plan and better investments, but to actually help them become a better investor, to actually coach them to have a better relationship with their finances. And I think that period in my life in between medicine and in finance was really a great training ground for that skill set.
Well, especially I'm thinking when you're working with professional athletes and military people who have such great commitment for what they're doing, that also can cross over into teaching people mindset and discipline around money, right? Because, yeah, so did that feel like, that went with you when you, or were you? Were you actually coaching you know what I'm trying to say? It's not about money particularly because you weren't there yet, but you were doing the things that taught that commitment that could cross over.
Yes. So I think what you're asking is, I'll just answer what I think you're asking. So the character qualities,
Thank you.
the temperaments necessary for an athlete to be successful in their sport, for a soldier to be prepared to
Right.
go deploy, are the exact same temperaments and character qualities necessary to have a good relationship with money and to build financial independence. I did not know that at the time. And then I saw
Right.
all these parallels. And there's actually a book that I read on an airplane to a wedding. And I thought it's called Simple Wealth, Inevitable Wealth, by a man named Nick Murray. And I said, this is the message I need to take into the world. And I have the skills to do it because I've been doing it with high-level athletes for a long time on an athletic standpoint. If I can help people utilize the tools that are already available to them to build better physical fitness, to build more mental toughness, I can do the exact same thing with with investors to build a better life, but it still requires the grit, the mental toughness,
Sure.
the discipline, the perseverance, the temporary sacrifice. All those things were very much a part of both fields, and it really was a huge blessing to have what felt like a little bit of a detour actually very much prepared me for what I'm doing now.
Right, that's exactly what I was asking. Okay, so that does make me want to ask now, though, your take on, or whether I don't know if you have any or many professional athletes or high-level athletes who are clients of yours, but there's so many, you know, that I'm into the basketball world. My family's a basketball family, and you see these kids today. Well, even you know, well, no, Kobe Bryant's an anomaly, but I mean, I've just been watching his a documentary about him on CNN, and they showed a picture of him announcing after high school that he was going right into the NBA draft. Well, he's an anomaly, as I said, anyway, because he was so focused from when he was a kid to what his goals were, so that I would imagine that his financial goals would have been handled better than most. But you see these young kids going into professional sports and they have no idea, and they come from poor backgrounds, and all they do is they've got all these diamonds around their neck, and they're, you know, what would you say? What do you work with any of these types of people, or what would you say to somebody like that? Because you don't want them to piss it all away, to be rude, but
No,
yeah.
but it's so I believe wealth is like a weight. So
Okay.
if you have somebody who was we'll just use this like CrossFit analogy, somebody who's been in the gym, they've been taking classes with your daughter for years, you put a weight on their back, that weight can actually make them stronger. They're prepared for it. They know how to use it. You take somebody that's never been inside of a gym or hasn't touched a gym in 20 years, you put 300 pounds on their back, it's going to harm them. And I think whether it's a celebrity or a college athlete or a young person coming into a lot of money, they get this weight of wealth that might help them had they been more prepared. But because they're not, it crushes them. I think wealth, it just like any tool, can be destructive if it's not wielded properly. And in our culture, in our society, we, Janice, we believe we can fix money management or money problems with more money. And it'd be like fixing poor driving with more horsepower, like giving my 16-year-old daughter, who's had two accidents in the last 30 days, giving her a faster car to deal with the fact that she keeps running into other people's cars. It doesn't work because it's the individual behavior. It's the relationship between her and the car that needs to change. We can swap out the car all day, but until she learns how to better manage the road, the vehicle itself and the
Her
awareness around
reactions,
her. Yes, the car is just the medium, and that's what we need to realize. We can't just add more money to the equation. If somebody is a poor steward of a modest amount of money, we give them millions, it becomes even more destructive. We've given them a bigger, more harmful, more, or not more harmful tool, but a more powerful tool with which they can hurt themselves.
good point. So there was a question I had here I wanted to ask you. Okay, I have a couple. So you emphasize, I've my notes here. You emphasize patience and choosing the hard right over the easy wrong. I love that. The hard right over the easy wrong. How does that philosophy strengthen client relationships?
Well, number one, it's necessary in almost all walks of life. Usually, the easy choice in the moment puts us on a wrong path in the future. If we choose temporary comfort or temporary relief, there's usually a cost we pay in the future. And I'll just give you, we already talked about Kobe Bryant, so if I can use the Kobe Bryant story, he is an anomaly, but there's a lot we can learn from him. After games, when everybody else would go out drinking, he would go hit the gym and work on the things that he felt needed to be polished. Even if they won the game and he had a great game, maybe he would do dribbling drills if he had too many turnovers. Sometimes he would go shoot 1,000 free throws after a game. He would go into a dark gym where nobody saw him and work quietly, mastering mundane tasks. Now, everybody celebrates the highlight reel dunks and the 60, 70 point games and all that stuff. But all that came from those dark moments in the gym where nobody was watching. And building wealth is the same thing. People celebrate the fancy retirement and going on the cruises and the nice cars and all that. But for the people who manage money well, that's not what got them there. That is a byproduct of the things they did behind closed doors for years and years and years. And here's what makes Kobe an anomaly. He did it by himself. You go to most people need somebody by their side as an accountability partner, somebody shoulder to shoulder along the journey with them to get them to do that, whether it's a workout partner, whether it's an accountability partner. In our case, we are accountability partners for finances and for wealth, but it's keeping people mastering the mundane, keeping them on the difficult path when they're making sacrifices, temporary sacrifices in the moment for a better future. Most people need somebody in their corner holding them accountable, but also reminding them of what is the payoff going to be.
Right.
This is only temporary. This is not forever. There's a better future out there waiting because you're willing to do the hard thing now.
It's so true. It's so true. And when I look back at, if I were to do it differently today, there are so many things I would do differently that I didn't know, I didn't understand, and I didn't want to know at the time because I was a product. Personally, me, I was a product of that dad who said, "Don't worry about it, I'll look after it." And that's what I heard all the time, right? And that's just me. Then my husband, other story, right? I don't want to get into it, but everyone's different, right? And they have different angles around money. But it makes it difficult to you have to work through it, and you have to want to work through it. Okay, so who's your? Well, let me just clarify something. In your company, Veritas Wealth Management, do you focus on like long term, or do you have different kinds of clients that have different risk tolerances that you do different things with? That would be the.
We do. We tailor somebody's financial plan to their specific goals.
Okay.
And their financial plan then dictates the investment strategy. And
Okay.
a lot of places do this backwards. A lot of individuals, they kind of collect investments for 30 years and then try to throw it together 2 years before retirement and make a financial house out of it. What we tell people is you wouldn't buy a house that was built without a blueprint. You shouldn't build your future without one either. And the idea is that we take long-term goals. Janice, what do you want your life to look like? If you never had to work another day in your life, you didn't need to produce a paycheck, what would you be doing? Who would you be spending time with? We want to make it about life goals and lifestyle goals rather than simply money goals. Now, we have to attach some money goals to that, but then we reverse engineer that process to where they are today. But objectives dictate the plan dictates the investments, and the investments or the tail. We want to make sure that the tail doesn't wag the dog. And too often, people are changing their investments around because of what's going on in the economy or what they think might happen. Maybe it's an election cycle. They're changing their investments even though their long-term goals haven't changed. And that's where that accountability is important. We want to make sure that if they're in the right investments, even if it's uncomfortable, that they stick it out, that they weather the storms. But to answer your question, everybody's plan and investment strategy is tailored to what their needs are rather than tailored to whatever people think is happening next in the markets or things like that, because that is a fool's errand. You should invest based on your goals, based on what is important and meaningful to you, not what's going on in the economy.
Does that mean also then that because the way your company is structured, you can choose whatever you want to for that investment for someone? You're not tied to, I've got to push these bonds this week or this. Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
Yeah.
it's yes. And it's such, and this is what was so hard getting started because I got started independently. I wasn't tied to another financial firm because I wanted that independence. I wanted to be able to meet with somebody, connect with them on a personal level, find out what was important to them, attach some goals to it, and then go find the tools necessary to build the life that that individual wanted. I mean, right now, what we're seeing is everybody comes in with these target date funds. They're this one size fits all, which means one size fits nobody. And they're not tailored to anything specifically. And I never wanted to be like that. I never wanted to have a list of products where, Janice, I've got this little box that I'm trying to jam you into. It's more about you tell me what you need to build, and then we'll go out and we'll find the best tools to
Best
do
way to
that.
do it. Okay. I think I've always liked that style or that process better.
Well, can I give you just a quick metaphor? Just
Yes.
think about this from a health perspective. You go to a doctor, you walk in the doctor's office, you don't even fill out a form yet. They don't know anything about you. And they start telling you about all the most popular prescriptions that they can write and all the benefits, all these things. And by the way, there's some really popular procedures. Everybody's doing this thing. And we'll schedule, like, what is a good day for your surgery? You're like, whoa, you don't even know what's wrong. Like, you don't even know why I came in here yet. Now you're laughing,
No, but it's a great
but the
analogy.
financial industry does the exact same thing. We're so product focused, we haven't even talked to the person about what they want their solution to look like. And I think my industry needs to learn from that, that it's about finding out what this person needs, not trying to sell them what is popular. Because ultimately, we're not selling anything. What we need is people to buy in. They're buying into a journey with us. It's a partnership. The investments are just the tools. It's the partnership that makes a difference. I mean, going back to basketball, yeah, everybody uses a basketball. But the basketball, the shoes, the court, all those things are commodities. They're all basically the same. It's how the team functions together that makes all the difference. It's all about relationships. It's all about the connectedness within that team. And I believe finance is no different.
You know, that you just reminded me of a funny story. My mother was widowed. She was in her 60s, and as I told you, she didn't know how to write a check. So she had to learn all the basics of looking after her finances. And she started by having a good friend of hers, a woman who had been a bookkeeper, teach her some of the basics, right? And then she got, I don't know how, who, and where this person came from, but she got a financial planner. And this guy's name was Ed. And every time we had to talk to my mom about money, she'd say, "I don't know, I have to ask Ed." And this went on for years. "I'll have to check with Ed." And it became like a joke, right? Because I lived here, I lived in Vancouver, she lived in LA, my sister lived in LA, but we never met Ed, right? But we knew Ed existed. And she wanted to buy a new car, so she get Ed to help her and see if she could move her money. She didn't get left as much as comfortably as she should have been, but that's the whole story about my dad. But so she had to be careful of her money. So it was always Ed. So my mom died many years later, and we had to talk to Ed because Ed was still in the picture. And so my sister and I went to meet him, and he was the nicest guy. And he'd done the best he could with her. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know, the details of how it all went, but it was so silly. It was so fun. Like, we went to meet Ed. And the other piece to that is my sister now uses Ed,
Oh, that's funny.
which I just thought was so funny. I don't know how old he is now, but. But anyway, I just thought that was funny, the trust that she had in this guy, and we didn't even know who he was.
Well, and not just the trust, but the partnership where they obviously had a dialogue going. She wasn't just asking investing questions. She was, and that's what's so important about this is we realize that because most people did grow up where finances are taboo, we're asking questions that your best friends, your family members don't even have the answers to. It's very, very intimate, and it requires time and a lot of relationship capital to build that intimacy. But it sounds like your mom and Ed developed that where they were working together. She wasn't asking
Absolutely.
for Ed's permission or anything, but she trusted his guidance, said, hey, this is a big decision. Before
How
I
could I
make
make it
that,
happen?
I want to circle Ed in and make sure we do this the right way. So that actually warms my heart. And I'm glad you finally got a chance to meet him.
Yeah, no, it was so funny. Anyway, okay, so I'm thinking not big business things right now, because I keep thinking about the fact that you have, is it six kids?
We have six kids,
You have
yes.
six kids. And I have a question here that makes me think, because my granddaughter as well. Okay, what advice would you have for families to build healthier conversations around money. But also, like, as an example, what do you teach your kids about money? Did they have or do they have allowances, or is that a no-no? Like, there's different takes on things like that. So I'm just curious.
Well, I already kind of praised you earlier, and I want to do it again because you took an opportunity to have a conversation with your granddaughter Amara, and there's a math lesson in it. Like, there's
Oh,
all
they're
kinds of
oh,
wonderful things
totally.
that you
Yeah,
did,
totally. I
but what
taught
you did,
elementary school, so it was just like right in my element until
but
she
you,
loses interest. Yeah.
but you normalized it, and I think that's what people need to realize. Even if you don't know a lot about finances, you might not feel like you have a lot of wisdom. That's fine. Just open up the conversation. It might even be explaining to your kids, like, hey, this is what's confusing to me about they changed some stuff in our 401k this week at work, and I don't even know what it's talking about. Just something like that. You could even express your confusion around money. You're like, hey, here's something I don't know. We're going to figure this out together as a family. But normalizing those conversations, because conversations about money will happen by design or by default. If you design conversations around money, they can be healthy, they can even be fun. I'm saying that as a nerd, so maybe it's not your version of fun,
It's okay.
but it can actually be something that draws the family closer together.
I hear you.
But if money conversations happen by default, it will usually happen under stress. And
And
even
that's
people who do very, very well financially, and I get connected with a lot of people that they're multimillionaires. They have a lot of wealth, but they still live in a scarcity mindset because, like we talked about earlier, we can't fix money issues with more money. So if you take somebody who has traumatic money experiences and you don't fix that relationship, giving them more money just gives them more money to worry about. It actually makes the problem worse. So even people who are really wealthy, we see, you talk about athletes buying all the jewelry, which my son taught me the other day, they call it ice or icing or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
ice. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But
I mean,
I mean, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze these people, but some of that might be them trying to distance themselves from that scarcity environment, you know, and so we all do it different ways. But I think just having those conversations, opening up with your kids, it doesn't matter so much what you're even talking about to a point. It just matters that you're talking about it. And you open up the freedom for them to talk about money, to ask questions about money. And even if you aren't very savvy with your own money, maybe it's something that you guys can learn together.
Yeah, I think. Do you believe in allowances or not?
So, okay, I got a funny story on that. So, I have six kids, but I'm still figuring this out. They're all so different. And, as a parent, you try to pretend like you've got everything lined out and figured out. And then your teenagers start calling you out. And then you both realize that, yeah, we don't know what we're doing. But anyway, with six kids, I should by now. But every now and then, I have one of those aha moments where I'm like, something worked, something clicked. So, this is a couple years ago. My youngest right now, they're 6 and 4, but they were 4 and 2 at the time. And they walk up to me. Everybody else is gone. My wife had the older kids. And the 4-year-old is the spokesperson. He comes up and says, Dad, we need to talk. And I thought, I wonder where this is going to go. He goes, Dad, Barrett and I were talking and we need money. It's like, okay. So 4 and 2, they had a little discussion. They come to me, Dad, we need money. I thought, where in the world is this going? So the next thing out of his mouth, he said, what kind of jobs do you have for us so we can earn it? And I thought, you know what? I'm doing something right. So for 2 hours, we were out in the yard. We were pulling weeds and trimming hedges and things like that. And I was so proud of these guys and a little proud of myself. And my wife gets home and she's like, why are my babies all scratched up and bleeding and dirty? And I was like, they were working. Anyways, but we do try to, even if it's menial stuff, but get them to attach production and service to money. That if first of all, if you want something, let's attach a goal to it. How much is that going to cost? And maybe even set up some parameters on how long it might take you. You know, for our younger ones, if they want to buy a $20 toy, it's going to take them a little while to earn that. But then lining up, what is that pathway? What are the types of jobs you can do to earn that thing? How can you serve your family? How can you serve the people around you? My mom lives just a mile away. So they do, she's 77. She has a very high, we'll just call it a, a labor-intensive property, just some land and things like that. So they go like, how can you serve grandma to earn some money? And really trying to attach those two, that the more you serve people around you, the bigger the impact you make in the lives of those in your circle, the more your own needs will be met. So that's what we really try to instill, rather than just giving them a flat
Yeah, I hear
allowance.
you. Okay. So I think we need to switch that up a little bit with Amara and instill that a little bit more. What we've noticed since Christmas, she got, oh, I know, she goes to the coffee shop with mom and grandpa sometimes, and mom and grandpa might have a card, gift card with the
Okay.
money on it. She said, I want my own gift card. She wanted her own to get her own drink, right? So for Christmas, she got one. So she got 10 hot chocolates on it or something like that. So she got to do that. But she goes, if she earns the right by doing something really good, she gets to go to the dollar store because she loves the dollar store, and she will have her own money that maybe was a gift for her birthday or whatever in her piggy bank, and she gets to spend X amount of money at the dollar store. So there's lessons there, and no, I can't afford that. Yes, I can, whatever, and stuff like that. But I think we need that earning piece in there as well. So, yeah.
Well, and even one of the things I was thinking about, maybe my son and your granddaughter should meet. They might be a cute couple, but also trade-offs too. Is it okay? You've saved up $6 for this toy, but you also want this other toy. So if you buy this one, you don't get. That's a lesson a lot of adults don't get. We want it all.
I know.
We
Yeah,
want
we
the
do.
nice vacation. We want the nice car. We also want our weekends. We don't want to have to do the overtime. There's always trade-offs, and again, it's being intentional about that, because a lot of times people make decisions and the trade-off costs them way more in the long run than they ever anticipated, but they don't think about it at the outset. So just talking to our kids about, okay, you've earned the money, that's great, but if you buy that means you can't do these other things. Maybe you can't buy the hot chocolate tomorrow, or maybe you can't do that thing with your friends, and we don't make them earn everything. I mean,
No, I get it. But
we'll feed our kids and stuff, but trying to work those lessons into everyday life. And James, we're not perfect. I bumble up all the time, but what I want is my kids to feel like they can come to me with those questions, and when they're 16, or when they're 18, or when they're 25 and they're in a tough financial spot, that they feel comfortable saying, Dad, we know you screwed up. You've made mistakes. I made one of my own. Can you walk with me and help me figure this out? And
Absolutely.
not feeling like they have to pretend to be perfect. Because that's what happens now, is we all put on it. We cover up our financial sins with credit cards, and nobody sees what's going on. We pretend like we got everything figured out. And yeah, we have the nice clothes, we have the nice car, but we're drowning in debt. We're not sleeping at night. We're fighting with our spouse. And just to be able to admit, I'm struggling right now, I need some help, it's so freeing when people can cross that. So with my kids, Janice, that's what I want, is for them to have the freedom to ask questions, to express frustrations, and just to have a healthy dialogue about money.
Amen. Amen on that. In your setup, business-wise, are you I'm thinking this because I have a friend who I want to listen to your podcast, because he's a in Canada here. There are different types of financial planners, like, and they'll take percentages, right, or commissions, front-end loaded or back-end loaded or whatever. And then there's what he is a for f he's a fee-based financial planner, so you pay for his services, but he doesn't put you in certain products like you. He would do what was the best thing, and he's building a plan with you. Is that the way your business works?
Still probably similar. There's different ways to do the fee, but we are a fiduciary, which means we have not just a regulatory obligation, but a moral obligation to do what's in the best interest of the individual, not to sell a particular product. So we make the same regardless of what fund company somebody uses, the types of funds, the type of investments. We make the same amount, and it takes away any potential conflict of interest, but it also puts us on the same side of the table, where in order for us to do better, that family, that client needs to do better. And when we're in the middle of a financial storm, and they see their 401k looking like a 301k, or they see, this big account temporarily go down, they see it in their statement. We feel it in our paychecks. So we're weathering it together. And I think that there's a sense of camaraderie that comes out of that. We felt it in 22, back during COVID in 2020, when the markets across the globe went down together. For people to know that we were all experiencing discomfort together, I think was actually really empowering. That sounds weird, but it allowed people to stay the course because they realized, you know what, we're all in this together. I'm not alone in my financial journey.
Okay, so last sort of financial question here. For me, it would be okay. Nobody has those glasses that we can see into the future, but with what's going on in your country these days, what are you telling people? Because surely to God, people are calling you and either going one way or the other, like we're glad this is happening or oh my God. So what are you telling people?
It's very polarizing. You're right. And what I'm telling people is to stay focused on your long-term goals. Don't let what's going on in the country, the economy, or in the world around us dictate your investing decisions. Do those things have an impact? Yes. But can you control them? No. And too often, my industry puts so much focus on all the things we can't control: elections, interest rates, the economy, wars in the Middle East, Ukraine, Russia. All that stuff matters, but we can't do anything about it. So if we're so focused on the short-term things that we can't control, we'll miss the impact on the long-term things that we can control. So it's always putting people's perspective back to their goals, their long-term plan. Are my current actions aligned with where I want to be and what I want to be doing in the future, and looking past this crazy world that we live in right now?
Well, when you say we can't do anything about it, I mean, we can. As little bit of it, we could all do a little bit to make it better one way or the other. And I'm not going to get into red or blue, but I mean, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I'm not like, yeah, don't take that the wrong way. It's voting and being involved in your community, and we being involved. I mean, you have the opportunity to have some, but it's very like you can't control
I know.
interest rates. You can't.
No, I know.
So yeah, do what you can in those areas. But the problem, Jance, is sometimes people spend hours a day focusing on that.
Oh gosh.
And it takes up not just so much of their time, but it takes their energy, it takes their focus, it creates myopic thinking, and it destroys a long-term perspective. Because if everything we're looking at is the here and now, we can't see the future. You can't have reading glasses on and see something 2 miles away. It brings your focus into what's right in front of you. And it also, I think, it can actually create a state of learned helplessness. If we are so focused on the things that we don't have much influence over, some or sorry, very little or none at all, then the story that we start telling ourselves is, in order for me to be financially independent, I have to get lucky. I'm just going to sit here and all these things need to line up in my favor, instead of saying, you know what? Maybe I've got some things going against me. Maybe there are some hurdles, but there's a lot I can't control, but there's a lot that I can do to improve my situation, and if nothing else, my relationship with money. And that's where this process is going to start.
That's a great place to end. I think that's amazing. And I think we covered the gamut from the macro to the micro to the macro. And I know that I can tell that you're passionate about what you do and that you care about people. And I think that ultimately is the goal, right? That you're helping people lead better, have better lives and have a better understanding of the power of money, but that it's that, what did you say? Money, when it masters,
Money is a wonderful servant, but it's a terrible master.
love that. I got to write that one down. I like that one. Thank you again for being here. One last question. Can you let us know, and I'll put it in the show notes, how my audience can get hold of you? And I didn't even mention, but I think it was maybe a couple of years ago, you have a book called, it was it that long ago?
It was spring of 24, Forging Financial Freedom. It came out early in 2024.
Which I'm guessing covers a lot of what you talked about
Yes.
today. Okay.
It's a
Forging
and
financial.
it's very much about the mindset. It's our perspective around money. There's a lot of of protocols and processes that books can teach on how to build wealth and financial independence, but there's not a lot of books on how to think differently about money. So I wrote the book that I wish I had read 20 years ago, to help people create a better relationship with money so they can use the already existing tools and processes more effectively.
Perfect. Now I'm going to read it. I don't like to do that anyway. Before I interview somebody, I want to come in cold. But that sounds like a book I could probably read because it's not all about the it's more about the mindset. I like that. So how can my audience get hold of you, find your book, find you?
Forging Financial Freedom. It's on Amazon
Okay.
and available as a Kindle or hardback.
Okay.
VeritasAlaska.com is our website, and on
Never
Instagram.
even mentioned that you were in Alaska. Oh my goodness, that's
Yes.
right.
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
Veritas Alaska. We work with people all over, but VeritasAlaska.com is the website, and Veritas.Alaska on Instagram, and you can find me pretty easily on LinkedIn. Just look up Chad Hufford Veritas, and I'll pop right up.
Okay, sounds good. This was a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. And what have I got written here? It's clear that true wealth isn't just about the size of your bank account. It's about living in alignment with your values, building strong relationships, and creating a life you love. And I know that that is a passion for you, I can tell. And thank you for sharing about your kids as well. I appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thanks for letting me come on.
You're very welcome. There we go. So remember, thank you to my audience for being here. Please let me know if you enjoyed our conversation and reach out to Chad for further conversation about wealth and mindset around money. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know, I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.